And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning, it's November 10th. Let's see, currently we've got 37 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 32 degrees in the Heber Valley, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout your Monday. Look for partly sunny skies out there. We've got a couple high clouds rotating around a ridge of high pressure, but that's not going to mean any precipitation chances, and we'll still see plenty of sunshine. High temperatures will climb to around 60 degrees for us in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-60s as we go towards the Heber Valley. As we go into your forecast for your Monday night, look for clear skies, temperatures dipping back down into the upper 20s to lower 30s across the Wasatch Back. As we go throughout your Tuesday, you guessed it, more sunshine with that high pressure in place. A couple of high clouds could be around for our Veterans Day. Happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there. Otherwise, temperatures climbing to around 60 again in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid-60s for us in the Heber Valley. As we move into the middle of the work week, we start to see more significant changes. We'll call it partly cloudy, if not partly cloudy to mostly cloudy skies out there. Temperatures, again, will climb to around 60 in Park City for a high. Highs will be in the mid-60s for the Heber Valley. We'll start to notice some gusty southwesterly winds picking up. Those really ramp up for us on our Thursday. Look for increasing clouds and gusty winds. Highs only in the upper 50s in Park City. Highs will be in the mid-60s for us in the Heber Valley. But that Thursday forecast will be the last real warm day of the forecast because big changes arrive just in time for the end of the week. On your Friday, look for a good chance, in fact, a likely chance of rain and snow chances moving back into the Beehive State. In fact, high temperatures in Park City as we get towards your Friday, only in the 30s with a good chance of snow developing out there in Park City as we get a rain to snow event as the front moves through. The Heber Valley will be looking at that rain to snow transition by Friday afternoon into Friday night as temperatures climb into the low 40s for highs there. We'll likely wake up to some morning snow across the area as we get into your Saturday morning. Morning low temperatures will be down into the low 20s on Saturday morning, with high temperatures struggling to get above freezing in Park City, and we'll see those high temperatures only around 40 in the Heber Valley. We stay chilly with highs around 40 in Park City and highs in the mid-40s in the Heber Valley into next week. So get ready for change by the end of the week. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with Deputy Director of Summit County Health Department Kendra Babbitts. Later on, Summit County Library Director Dan Compton and Friends of Library Board Member Sue Nimblock with details on their upcoming used book sale. Park City Community Foundation CEO Joel Zero will have a recap of this year's Live PC, Give PC. And from the Park City Education Foundation, President and CEO Ingrid Whitley and Jen Bello, Vice President of Advancement, with an update on some of their fundraising efforts and programs that they offer. In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Deputy Director Kendra Babbitts. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with an update on the WIC program. That's the Women, Infant, and Children Food Program. That's what's happening there with all of what's going on with the federal government.
So currently the WIC program is operating on a month-to-month basis. The state WIC department has made sure that we have funds to continue operations as usual for our Summit County WIC recipients. However, that is on a month-to-month basis. So we received confirmation last week that we have funds available through the end of November, and then we will meet again with the state the first week of December to determine what funding looks like through the month of December.
All right, so that program does what? I mean, and how is it different from SNAP?
So WIC is often a subpopulation of SNAP. A lot of our WIC recipients also receive SNAP, but WIC focuses specific on women who are pregnant, nursing, and have young children. So it provides that additional nutrition and basic needs support for developing children and young women.
Yeah. Is it a state program versus a federal program?
It's a federal program, and the funds go from the federal program through the state down to the county.
All right. Any idea what Summit County receives through that WIC program?
Since I don't oversee that program, I don't know. I apologize about that, but I can get back to you on that if you'd like.
All right. So at this point, unlike the SNAP, which basically they cut those in half, the benefits, this is full funding for the WIC program?
Yes. The only difference is we're not currently accepting new applicants, but we are maintaining all the services for current applicants.
All right. And who's eligible for WIC?
So women who reach a certain level of poverty with the federal poverty level, so often these are folks who qualify for other services like Medicaid or SNAP. They often have the same qualifications. And we are always trying to do outreach typically when we're not in a funding crunch. There are a lot of folks who move around who we try and do outreach for to make sure that they're getting the services that they need. We know that this under the five population is very susceptible to development if they're not getting the proper nutrition that they need, as well as mothers. We want to make sure that they understand breastfeeding, the importance of breastfeeding, getting proper nutrition and education generally.
Yeah, so with SNAP, they have a card. They can go grocery shopping, right, and then use that towards that. WIC is a little bit different. They have to come to the health department?
So not necessarily. They also have a card that they have vouchers to go to the grocery store, receive what they need. And we have a backup program ready to go in place. We've worked really closely with our county manager, county council, and our WIC director to make sure if something changes from the funding we usually expect to see from the state, that we are ready to provide some of those basic needs.
Okay, because it used to be you'd go and pick up a block of cheese or something, yeah?
Right.
That's not the case anymore.
No, and in fact, you can re-up your benefits on your card online now. That's been a change just recently.
Okay. So how does the county health department assist with these federal food programs?
So we administer them. So a lot of these federal programs, the money comes from the federal government, goes to the state level, and then they get passed through to us. And then we make sure that we are finding the people in the community who need these services, help them get enrolled, and know how to use the program and the services.
All right. Do they have to be U.S. citizens?
Yes, I was going to say, so there's been some changes in that recently, and I don't have the most up-to-date information on that I can get back to you on, but we provide services to anyone in the county, and like I said, we are just providing services to those who are currently enrolled, not new applicants.
Mm-hmm. All right, any idea how hard Summit County's kind of been hit by all of this with the funding cuts for food and nutrition?
So we have quite a few families within the county who rely on these services. Just within Park City alone, there's over 150 households who rely on SNAP, and of course the subpopulation of that is WIC. And so there are lots of folks in the county who are in need of these services, and we've seen based on the demand with our food pantries that when we don't see those services come in, that there are a lot of need that people have, and we've seen a rush on those. So we're trying to increase the availability of food there.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. You, the county, don't run food pantries, but support those that are available?
Correct. Yes, so we started just last week, we launched our Feed the Need campaign, and this is a countywide campaign that we have a great team across the health department as well as other folks at the county to support. And we are doing a food drive as well as monetary donations to support the need at all of our food pantries. So that includes the Christian Center here in Park City, that includes Camas, Colville, Oakley food pantries as well. And we are seeing a need across the entire county, not just one area of the county.
Okay, so did we got the Camas food pantry back up and running? Because at one point it seems like it had closed.
So they had to reduce hours. Because of staffing and funding issues earlier on in the year, they had to close from 2 days a week to 1 day a week. And they do have very specific operating hours. So we do ask if people want to make donations and they're planning to drop food off directly at the pantries that they're aware of those unique operating hours.
Okay, I think it's so they lost their lease or something, or their rent was being doubled or something. So they had to, yeah, scramble for a minute. Okay, anything else that we want to talk about with regard to food? Food need?
Yeah, if anyone is interested in donating, whether food or monetary donations, we have a website set up that you can link to directly from our website. So if you go to summitcountyhealth.org, there's a link right at the top there, and you can read all about the desired items for each food pantry, how to donate food. We have food boxes located each health department location as well as every county service building. And our health department team has graciously offered to help make sure that any donations get picked up and delivered to those food pantries.
Great. Okay, what's the latest with measles?
So measles and respiratory diseases, we are grateful that we have not seen any cases yet in Summit County, but we have seen cases every week pop up in Utah County as well as Southwest Health District, so Washington County area. And we are very close to Utah County. We have a lot of folks who come up here from Utah County, and so we're always on the alert there. We're grateful that we haven't even picked it up in our wastewater since the beginning of September, which is indication that we're not even seeing it within the community that's not being reported. So we're grateful that hasn't been an issue yet, but we are still encouraging readiness among the community to make sure that when it gets here, and we know it's a when, not an if, but when it gets here, people are prepared by having their full vaccination series for the MMR vaccination.
Okay, so are you seeing more people come in for these type of vaccinations?
We have. We started doing quite a bit of a push in the summer before schools started again and worked with our school partners to ensure that they understood what the implications would be if there was a measles exposure. We did a big push among parents in back-to-school packets to encourage knowledge of vaccine records and to help get vaccinations up to date if needed.
All right, so is the MMR like tetanus that you need to have it every 10 years or something?
No, usually if you've had it and it's a two-dose series, you don't need to have it again. If you don't have vaccination records, though, you can get it again. There's no harm in doing that. The other option is you can do what's called a titer check to see if you have antibodies from measles. So if you've had measles maybe as a child, you usually have an immunity from that and you do not need to have the vaccine. But there are some nuances there that we want to make sure you understand.
Okay. Let's see, this time last year, it seems like we were seeing a lot of that RSV virus going around, as well as the norovirus. What about now?
Currently, we haven't seen any of those yet, fingers crossed. This is typically kind of our lower beginning level to respiratory disease season. Last year, we had just a handful of COVID flu RSV cases at this time. We haven't seen any this year, which is good news, but we also know that it's coming. We've seen it picked up in different areas around the state, and as people start going indoors more, have their holiday gatherings, it's a higher risk for people to pick up and spread that disease.
Okay. Any other issues that you are seeing out there in terms of health-related issues?
We really just want to encourage people to get vaccinated ahead of the holidays. So this is still the perfect time to receive your vaccine. If you haven't received it yet, make sure you get your updated COVID shot. Make sure you get your flu shot. It takes about 2 weeks to provide that complete protection once you've received your vaccine. And so if you get it now, you should be able to be fully protected before going into holiday gatherings for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah, so what does the health department offer? Vaccines for free, for a charge, or how does that work?
All of the above. So we offer vaccines for adults and children, as well as uninsured or underinsured. And we have appointments scheduled. We're just wrapping up our community clinics. But if you would like to schedule an appointment, you can call our main office number at 435-333-1500 and schedule an appointment there. And depending on what you're able to pay or what insurance will cover, we can offer all of the above.
Okay. And Summit County Health Department will be moving eventually, I think, to the Skull Candy building, or are you going to kind of keep a satellite office where you are?
It's to be determined. We are in close conversations with the county manager as well as the architects we met with last week to just see here's what the health department needs would be in terms of office space, storage space. And so they have taken that information back and we'll continue meeting with them to see if they can meet the needs for whatever health department employees may be asked to move into that space. But we have no concrete plans at this point and are just waiting to hear back.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Oh, we just wanted to once again put a plug in for the Feed the Need food drive and encourage people to go to our website, summitcountyhealth.org, and they can find the donation button there to get more information and to find information about measles, the wastewater, COVID, flu, RSV, and for anything WIC related. So go there, encourage everyone to do that and to get their vaccines.
Okay, Summit County Deputy Health Director for the Health Department, Dr. Kendra Babbitt. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Friends of the Summit County Libraries will be hosting their semi-annual used book sale this week. In the studio with details, I have Summit County Library Director Dan Compton, along with Sue Nimblock, President of the Friends of the Summit County Library. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sue, let's start with you. When and where is the sale happening?
So the sale is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this coming week, November 13, 14, and 15. It will be at the Kimball Junction branch, which is, 1885 West Ute Boulevard. Thursday is from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday are from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay. And the Thursday is open only to members? Is that how you've got it going?
Yes. Thursday is the member sneak preview. Anyone can come. We will have a desk out front. You can join Friends of the Library for just $10 a year, and then you can come right in.
Okay. Any idea how many books you've got for sale?
A lot. And of all genres of books, this year we will also have our very popular mystery books feature, where we have boxes and they will be labeled whether they're mystery or romance or young adult, and they'll be all wrapped up and you won't know what's in them, and you can buy them for at bargain prices, which is always kind of fun.
Okay, so that's what the board members, Friends of Library, have done, just kind of box these things together?
Yes, and we have some teenagers helping us do that as well.
So are the books individually wrapped, or it's just one big box that's wrapped?
One big box that's wrapped. And this is in addition to a lot of racks of books, you know, just individual books for sale as well.
Yeah, and how much are the books going to be?
So we've simplified our prices. Children's books will be two for a dollar. Adult paperbacks, $1. Adult hardcover, $2. DVDs, CDs, $1. Games, $2.
Okay, so people still sell CDs and DVDs?
We still have some, yes.
Okay. And let's see, where are all the books collected? At the individual libraries? Is that how this all works? And then you bring them to...
Yes, we do. People do drop off at all three branches, but mostly the Kimball Junction branch, and we have a basement downstairs that is its own kind of mini book storage area. And so we have volunteers from our board who are helping us organize the books, and we'll have volunteers set up as well on Thursday.
Okay. Now, do you do something similar to the Park City Library, where they have kind of a Friends Corner where books are kind of replaced every week?
We do have that, actually, in all three branches, and we do quite well with that. People seem to like having a rack that they can go look at, and we replenish those books on a regular basis.
Okay.
Can I mention, Leslie, one other thing we're having this year, which is new, is that Pippi, the reading dog at Kimball Junction, will make an appearance on Saturday morning from 10 to 12.
Oh, so what does a reading dog do?
Reading dog helps young children, or anyone, for adults too, anybody who just feels better about reading if they have this cute, cuddly dog next to them. And it has proven quite effective with other programs. Pippi makes regular appearances at the library, and so we're happy that Pippi will be at our book sale.
Okay, is Pippi specially trained to do this, or?
She is. She's a certified therapy read dog. Like, there's a program for it where they have to get certified. And so the point of the program is to have kids who might be struggling with their confidence with reading to set up an appointment. And reading to a dog is a lot less intimidating than reading to an adult and who might be judging them. So kids can set up appointments to read with Pippi at all three of our branches, and it's been a great program for us.
Oh, okay, so Pippi doesn't care how you say the word?
Nope.
Yeah.
No judgment.
Uh-huh. And what, she just patient enough? I mean, just likes to cuddle. I mean, that's kind
yep.
of a trait, I guess, that you
yep.
got to have.
She has had to go through a lot of training, and she just... is a great listener.
Yeah. Okay, so the money you raise, how is that divvied up between all of the library branches?
So the money we raise goes to support all of the programs at all three branches. For example, we helped support the One Book, One Community event this past summer when author John Valiant came. We also sponsor the Great Decisions Adult Discussion Program at Kimball Junction, which is usually over 75 individuals and will start up again in late January. And that is an adult foreign policy discussion program. We sponsor seven different little free libraries in Summit County. We have them in Hennifer, Camas, Kimball Junction, Marion, and Oakley. And that's where, you know, we have paid for the structure, but then you bring a book, you come and you bring a book and you can take a book, and those are very popular programs. We also buy furniture, we buy equipment for all three branches, we sponsor painting classes, so quite a variety.
Yeah, so Dan, do you kind of give the Friends kind of a list, and then they just choose amongst themselves what they want to fund?
Yeah, when the library has needs, we send those requests in, and then the board votes on them. And another upcoming program that they're funding is that free screening of The Librarians on Wednesday, November 19th at 7 p.m. So we've worked with Park City Film to get that set up, and then there will be the panel discussion afterwards, which I believe you are moderating.
I am, yeah. It's a great film. Have you been able to see it?
I got to see it at Sundance and got really excited about it, and then a member of our library board really wanted to get a screening available to the public, and then we reached out to Friends and they agreed to underwrite.
Okay. All right, so that's November 19th. And in terms of the, I mentioned that the book sale is semi-annual. You do what, spring and fall? Is that how you used to do kind of holidays?
Yes, and it has varied over the past several years. But right now, quite frankly, we anticipate this will be our last book sale for a while for Summit County Library because of the upcoming move. And so we don't know what's going to happen next year. We will have to wait and see.
Okay, so stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Dan, what can you tell us? Because we just heard kind of from Kendra. They don't know what's happening there at Skull Candy.
So, things are progressing. The county will be interviewing firms today, actually, and making a decision soon about who will take on that project. And then I anticipate we'll be moving in May or June of next year. So it's going to be a pretty quick timeline. And we're going to be moving into a larger space that's planned out a little bit better, in my opinion, because right now at Richens Building, we've kind of have some offices downstairs. And even my office isn't right in the library. And at this new space, I'll be able to be in the library. We'll have some study rooms, small conference rooms as well, a much larger children's area, even with a, dedicated craft space for them in the library. And then also on that first floor, we'll have the DMV and county council chambers and a large auditorium space as well, some other conference rooms. So I'm really excited about it. I'm sad to see the Richens Building go because I've been there for a long time, but it's also exciting for me to just see the library kind of come together and be all in one space.
Okay, so you'll be on the first floor along
Yes.
with those other offices,
yeah. Correct. I don't know what's happening on the second floor yet. I can't speak to that, but I do know it'll be library and DMV on the first floor, and it's anticipated that we're moving late spring, early summer of next year.
Wow, okay. So how much square footage do you have now, and then how much are you getting?
So the library right now has about 8,000 square feet in the Richens Building, and just the actual library dedicated space in the new building is about 10,500. And then if you count, there's going to be a public lobby space and restrooms and things like that, and then as well as that large conference room, if you add all that together, I don't have that exact number, but it's significantly larger than what we're doing now.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not just moving what you've got, but it's then furnishing it.
And like I said, something we've wanted for years is some study rooms and small conference rooms for people. That's the big thing we're lacking is those spaces for people to come and have a nice quiet space to work if they need it.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive though, right? I mean, we've got, the Park City Library, which you don't fund, but you've got the Snyderville Basin Library, you've got the Camas, the Colville, you've got the Bookmobile in Hennifer, the Book Lockers. That's a lot. And I look at Wasatch County, they got one library.
Right.
How did that happen? How did we get?
That's a good question. I know Wasatch is trying to expand to have some other locations or even, a bookmobile type service. But we're just very fortunate. We have a supportive county that wants to fund library services. And we've also had to get creative, for Hennifer, and we bring the bookmobile there, but we worked with their town to get the locker out there and provide some services there. So, I'd love to have a branch in every town, but we do what we can to bring the services to the people.
Yeah. Camas Library, of course, also relatively new. What about the Colville Library? I've never been there.
Colville, they remodeled the hospital building there. That was opened in about 2012, and Camas was about 2018. So the Richens Building was in existence before I started working here. I think it was around about the time of the Olympics, early 2000, 2001. We've been there for about 25 years, and this will be a big change, but we're excited, we're embracing it, and can't wait to see it.
Okay. Again, the Friends of the Library Used Book Sale happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Again, members only 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, but easy to do, $10, and you're a member. Mm-hmm. Hey, anything else that you wanted to mention?
I was just to mention also, if you can buy a library bag at the book sale and fill it for $15, and our library bags are quite large. You can also bring your own. So there are lots of ways to buy books at the book sale.
So is that just the last day, or is that any time?
The whole time. from the beginning.
Oh, okay.
And I would also add, we've graciously accepted donations for a long time, and we're happy to do so up until the sale. But after that, we are going to actually be redirecting people to donate to some other locations, just because we don't want to have to move more than we have to move next year. So we're just going to politely ask people to take them to some other locations. But for now, you're fine, because we have the sale this week, but then we'll ask you to go elsewhere.
Okay. And where I just turn people away then when they kind of show up, or direct them somewhere else?
We have
else.
A little handout with some other good options for people to direct them. And I mean, if they're only bringing in one book and it's a new, you know, 2025 mm-hmm. book, we'll take it. You know, we can probably add that to the collection. But if you're bringing boxes and boxes, we're going to have enough to deal with moving a library, that we don't need to be moving more donations as well.
Yeah. Okay. Again, you, with the books that you've got left over, then where do you donate those as well, then, to somebody?
We have several programs. We really would prefer to keep books out of landfills. So we have donated before to underserved communities in Utah and other areas. We have sent books to an orphanage in Tijuana earlier this year. We recycle what we can, and the whole goal is to keep books in the community and out of landfills.
Awesome. Okay, Sue Niblock, Dan Compton, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the 2025 edition of Live PC, Give PC is the best yet in terms of money raised, but this year was down by more than 500 donors. In the studio with the final results, I have the CEO of the Park City Community Foundation, Joel Zero. He's joined by Elizabeth Spratley and Alex Schlope, who are with one of the many sponsors of the event, Talisker. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Joel, let's start by getting the final results.
The final result is we raised $5.5 million, which is a new record, and we had about 6,500 individual donors.
Okay, which I believe is down from years past.
It is, but it was a tremendous success. We raised more money than ever, and, you know, the starting point is 6,500 donors. It's a lot of people. It's more than we get in our municipal election. It's like a county election, so, you know, it's something the community should really be proud of.
Yeah, and that has been like one of the goals in years past, was increasing that number of donors.
Yeah, we see it as a community-wide event. We want to increase community belonging. So we make accessibility really easy with a $5 minimum donation. But I get it. People are really uncertain this year. So our bigger donors stepped up, which was amazing, because there's a lot of need. And I can understand people who are worried about their income and making decisions between gas and food. You know, maybe you're not giving this year. I get it. But I do think we can improve with our out-of-town or part-timers. So we haven't really cracked that nut, but I'm so proud of our community for stepping up.
Yeah. And again, the money is really what it's all about.
It's incredible. Yeah. A lot of nonprofits. It's neighbors giving to neighbors, and our nonprofits made their budgets this year because of the generosity of our community. It's phenomenal.
Well, the Community Foundation may have raised the most money of all. I think I read $718,000.
Yeah, that's right. We had a very, very good year. And a lot of those funds are allocated to our initiatives. So we grant back out to the community. Our community belonging grants are funded through that. So part of what we do is make grants to the community, and that money enables us to do that.
Okay, so you have like the community fund. Is that the community that you're talking about?
We have the community fund. That's part of, you know, not to get too technical, that's part of our operating fund. We've got our climate fund, we've got our early childhood work. So the gifts that come to the Community Foundation really do support our work in the community and are often turned around back out as gifts to other nonprofits.
Okay, and so how is the money you raise? I mean, your funds are listed as part of the many options available that people can contribute to, but do you also take some of the, you know, if somebody is making a $10 donation to KPCW, would a portion of that go to Community Foundation?
Oh, not at all. All of the funds that are allocated to the specific nonprofits like KPCW are passed on to KPCW. We don't take a cut. This is a service to the community. This is all of the nonprofits chipping in, doing the marketing, getting their donors out. And that's why we had such a strong performance.
Okay. Of the other nonprofits that participated, there are almost 150, I think. Who were the big winners?
Oh, we've got the Spirit Awards and the Arts Council and Latinos in Action were out on the street raising a big hoopla. They're big winners. We've got in different tranches, Talisker was a generous sponsor. They sponsored our Eastern Summit work, and Peace House, Wasatch Immigration Project, and Hope Alliance were the big winners there. They have at least 50% of the people they serve in Eastern Summit County. So we had $47,000 worth of prize money allocated to a whole bunch of organizations that turned out the donors.
Okay, so Alex, how did Talisker contribute? Again, he mentioned it was for the East Summit County.
Yeah, so we had a landing page on our website where everybody could go on and donate. We raised $61,101. Basically, you could go on and pick which organization you want to donate to. And we're really happy with how it turned out.
Okay, and then what does Talisker get out of being a sponsor, Elizabeth?
Well, one of the things that we really like about being a sponsor for the Park City Community Foundation is being a part of something bigger than us. So the town itself, it runs off of, you know, our workforce and then all the people that come to visit. And it really brings all of that together to make everything successful and make the town run successfully and build community.
Okay. Let's see. So what are the winners get? Money?
Yep. The winners get money. So we've got different awards for different things. So turn out the most donors. We have it for smaller organizations, medium-sized, large. We have it for our different leaderboards like Sports in Iraq or Early Childhood. And it's a way to incentivize our nonprofits to really do the work to get out their contributors. And it's a way to maximize the individual contributions. So people who give during Live PC, Give PC often get their donations matched. And everybody shows up, Leslie, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah. So how do the sponsors fit in? I mean, they help pay kind of the cost of making this happen?
They do, right? So they sponsor different leaderboards. They help us pay for the back end platform that all the nonprofits are using, and they help us to get the word out. It is government. It is our businesses. It's our nonprofits. It's everybody in the community coming together on our annual day of giving.
Okay. So have you set a date for next year?
We have not. I don't think we have. Okay. We may have. It'll be around this time. Trust me, you're going to hear about it.
Okay. And is there any talk about maybe limiting the number of nonprofits? I mean, I kind of looking through, there were a handful, you know, that just didn't get any.
You know, Leslie, we have our criteria for what it takes to join it. And if you are a nonprofit serving people in Summit County, you're welcome to be part of it. And we're going to let the donors decide where they want to allocate their money to. And it's about doing the work to get your donors turned out.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of $5 donations? Because that is the minimum.
We do. We do. What I love most is when I hear about parents working with their kids, talking to their kids about what they want to do and saving throughout the year and allocating the money that they have earned, maybe through chores, to nonprofits. It's really teaching the ethos of help out your neighbor.
Okay. Alex, Elizabeth, anything else you wanted to add?
We just love Park City. It's such a beautiful community. And yeah, we just want to show as much support as possible.
It was very fun to see everyone come together this year and raise so much money. Yeah. 5.5 is a lot.
And we couldn't do it without you guys, so thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, like in 24 hours. I mean, right?
It's crazy.
It is.
Fantastic.
It's really cool to see.
Okay. Hey, Joel, Elizabeth, Alex, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.
In the studio now with an update from the Park City Education Foundation. I have President and CEO Ingrid Whitley, along with Vice President of Advancement, Jen Bello. Good morning.
Good morning,
Leslie.
We always like to start by giving you guys an opportunity to kind of remind our listeners what Park City Education Foundation is and what it is you do.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. Park City Education Foundation funds and supports educator-powered initiatives that inspire all Park City students to reach their academic and lifelong potential. And we do that through raising about $2 million a year that goes back into our schools to fund over 100 programs.
Wow. Okay. Since we've last talked, you have had a couple of major fundraisers. Of course, Just Live PC, Give PC on Friday. How'd you do there?
Yeah, that was great. We were number one on the education leaderboard in terms of number of donors, number three overall. So we were very excited about that, about 720 donors, and I think there's been a lot more even since then. So we're very grateful to the community for supporting. PCEF was fundraising. We were also fundraising for Bright Futures, and then there were 24 school projects, so things from debate, you know, all the way to after school club at Ecker called Oblemos and everything in between.
Yeah, and those were all kind of run separately, those different, yeah.
Yeah, so what we're able to do, a lot of those groups don't have any other way to raise money unless they sell maybe candy or wrapping paper or wreaths, and because they're not a 501c3, right? So we offer that platform, and we give them some training, we give them tips and pointers as the fundraising experts, and then if they follow those, they tend to do really well, and several of those groups did make their goal, and in fact, during the day, we were like, maybe you should raise it a little more because you're doing a great job. So it's super fun. It's a great way to sort of teach that philanthropy for students, and I will say that most of the teachers and coaches, it really is student run, so they really let their students run with it.
Yeah, so your numbers, do they come from then all of those different programs?
Yes,
okay.
Yep, they all roll up to that.
Yeah. And how is it that you use the money? I mean, does it just go into general fund?
Yeah, other than our fundraising for Bright Futures, which is, of course, restricted to that program, anything that we raise for our organization is unrestricted funding. So generally goes right to programs back into the schools. And yeah, it's a great community fundraiser. We're so thankful to be part of it.
Okay. And how is Bright Futures going?
Really well. So the year is in gear, right? Last time we were on, we had Pepper Elliott. She's the Bright Futures counselor at the high school. She's able to meet with students, you know, weekly and offer programs every Friday for students. They've taken a couple of college visits already. They went to USU, I believe.
USU and UVU.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So recently. And yeah, she's doing really well. She's got some incredible offerings for students this year.
Okay, people just need to find her and get more information.
Yeah, exactly. She's available for any first-gen student at the high school.
All right.
And she is reaching out to them as well. So she, everybody's on her radar.
Okay.
So she will find you.
The Red Apple Gala, how did you do there?
Yeah, that was a great night. We went with a theme for the first time in a long time. Before it was just, you know, red apple, wear red. Impact the future, and that is what we're all about. That is what you do when you support education. We have this great public school, and that in these times of uncertainty, one thing's for sure, and you can impact the future with a great education. So we did that with our presenting sponsor, Zions Bank, and of course, Montage Deer Valley puts on an amazing night. We had, with the theme, we had some new activities. We had palm and tarot card readers, and people came up to me afterward and said they were right on target. It was very spooky, but it was very fun. Super mission-filled night. We debuted our new video, which is online now. That was great, and we raised close to $600,000. So very, very exciting. So between that, Build the Foundation, and Live PC, Give PC, you know, the fall is busy fundraising time for us, and we are so grateful to parents in the community for helping us reach our fundraising goals.
Great. You do better at the Red Apple Gala than you do with running with Ed?
Yeah, so the Red Apple Gala is our number one fundraiser for dollars raised, and then Running with Ed is our number one fundraiser for participants. So Running with Ed, we try to make it as inclusive and accessible as possible. You know, we scholarship all the teachers and students, and then the gala is, you know, 280 people in a room where we're hoping they're all raising the paddle for as much as they possibly can.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about one of the programs that you do is the program wellness. How is the Ed Foundation helping with wellness?
Yeah, so this is the third year of a pilot program that started at Treasure Mountain, and it's funded generously by the Alnoba Lewis Family Foundation. Thank them for their support. So this is the third year of the pilot. We're at the high school this year. Obviously, Treasure's closed, so we couldn't be there again. And she is a really embedded coordinator supporting students with all of their social and emotional kind of wellness and needs. And that looks like really, you know, amplifying student and teacher connections through purposeful kind of mentorship, school-wide behavior, positive behavioral intervention systems, making sure students are getting to school. Absenteeism is a challenge kind of nationwide right now. And then embedding executive functioning lessons into their school day. And so this coordinator kind of creates the lessons and then makes sure the teachers have what they need to deliver those.
Yeah, I mean, can you say any more about the absenteeism?
Yeah, I don't have the numbers on that. And, you know, we're in a community that really kind of emphasizes education. But, of course, there are still students that struggle to get to school. And so this person is there to really follow up with students and their families to make sure that they're in school, right, getting the education that they need.
Yeah. Ed Foundation also financed the Yonder pouches, the cell phone pouches?
Yes. Popular? I don't know. Maybe not among students. We have seen, yeah, again, I've been in the high school a few times, and it's kind of incredible to not see any cell phones out during the school day. And whether it's because they're in a pouch or because it's a deterrent for students to bring them out, we think that their working teachers are happy. We did get a couple of student quotes, and you know, I think one of them said, Yonder pouches create a strong high school community, there's less use of technology, and it increases our rate of creativity. So that's from a student, right? Probably wouldn't say that in front of their friends, but when they're asked by a teacher, I think students are generally grateful that they don't have the pressure to have their cell phones out during the day. And it's hopefully creating an environment where they're interacting with each other more than their phones.
Right, right, because that's certainly what we've seen.
Yes.
Right? Everybody with their face on
yes,
their phone
exactly.
instead of with another face, yeah. Okay, so that will continue. I mean, I think we've got it at Ecker and the high school?
Yes, it's 6 through 12. And that's up to the school district. You know, they need to have phones away from bell to bell. That's kind of state legislation. How they do that is up to the individual schools. And our schools decided this year to go with the Yonder pouches. That is up to them in terms of how they might use that next year.
All right. You also have an upcoming Scholar Circle event. Tell me about this.
Yes. So some of your listeners who are Scholar Circle members, these are families, community members who give $1,000 or more a year. And of course, all of our Scholar Circle events are open to members and potential members. So if you just want to come and check it out. But this is our annual student showcase, our superintendent and student panel that we have every November. It's at the Pendry on November 19th from... now I'm blanking on the time, 6 to 7:30 p.m. and still a little tired from Live PC, Get PC. And what this is we have a panel, mostly high school students, and they're all involved in different things at the high school, from music to drama to culinary arts to aviation, the health sciences. The photography at the high school is just incredible. We have an AP photography student and then the superintendent as well. And so we have a panel that's moderated by Ingrid, asking them questions about what does it mean to have these programs that are kind of outside of the core? You know, what does it mean to you and your passions as a student? And it's so inspiring. And you get to really hear what your donations are doing, you know, boots on the ground for these students and how it is helping them decide what they might want to study in college or if they want to go straight to trade school because they've really enjoyed, you know, learning about construction or whatever it may be. There's just so many options open and, again, impacting the future, right, with your donations and your gifts. So that's available on our website. We do need to have accounts. You have to RSVP. You have to register on our website, pcef4kids.org. And we don't have a ton of room, but there's still space right now. So if you want to go, I would register now.
And it's a free event.
Yes, it's free.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
I wanted, as I was looking at this, I was thinking about two things, two of these programs have in common, both Bright Futures and the Wellness Pilot, and that is embedding a person in the school day. So, you know, we're covering a Park City School District employee salary who is there all day for the students for what they might need, whether you're first gen and so you need that extra support for whatever your post-high school journey is, or if you're struggling. And there are wonderful counselors and social workers, but this person, this embedded multi-tiered system of support coordinator, MTSS,
very good, Jen. Yeah.
She is kind of putting the strings all together. So connecting the students with these services and then adding additional things. So having that embedded support where students can just walk into an office rather than have to wait till after school, I think anecdotally we're already seeing it's game changing.
And I would just want to say thank you to all of the supporters from Friday and all fall, right?
Yes.
It's, again, Jen said, a really busy fundraising year. We can't provide the funding we do to the district without the support of generous donors. So thank you to the community.
Yes.
Okay. Ingrid Whitley, Jen Bella, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and this year a Park City resident is reminding Utahns about a powerful but silent killer tied to the disease, radon. Bill Johnson was diagnosed with lung cancer back in 2023.
After I was diagnosed, I was kind of left there searching. You know, I wasn't an avid smoker and just kind of shell-shocked at how I ended up being diagnosed with lung cancer.
The then 42-year-old didn't have the typical symptoms, which can include persistent cough, shortness of breath, and chest pain. Instead, he learned of his diagnosis from an MRI that was done after he had hurt his back.
My vertebrae were essentially crumbling, and my hip was, you know, the bone was essentially so compromised that I could barely walk.
While trying to understand his diagnosis, Johnson learned that radon gas is the second leading cause of lung cancer in the United States and the main cause of the disease among non-smokers. Radon comes from uranium deposits in soil that decay into radioactive gas and can seep into homes. Johnson believes he was exposed to the gas working in his basement office more than 15 years. He and his wife tested for radon when they bought the house in 2010. After his diagnosis, they tested again.
My brother and my wife tested the house, and it was summertime, so it was well ventilated, so the levels were very low. And then when I came home in October, all of a sudden, it skyrocketed in that room.
Johnson now works to educate Parkites on the risk of radon and advocates for annual testing. Utahns can receive a free radon test through utahradon.org or through the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. Now is a great time to test when all of your windows and doors are closed. Planning is underway to construct a new Park City Senior Center. KPCW's Grace Dorfler shares details about the options, which range up to $27 million.
With a rapidly growing membership, the Park City Senior Center is outgrowing its existing location on Woodside Avenue. City leaders have identified the Mawinney parking lot as the site for a new building across the street from the library. At the Park City Council meeting Thursday, representatives from Sperano and Mooney Architecture presented three possible site designs. Architect Ann Mooney said around 16,000 square feet would fit a lounge, kitchen and dining room, and a range of activity spaces. Construction of a 15,000-square-foot building would cost around $11 million. Contractor expenses, site construction, and parking costs will add millions of dollars more to the total price. The existing senior center is around 3,000 square feet. Seth Streifel from Sperano and Mooney gave the total cost estimates.
We just want to make it clear that this isn't a construction cost. This is a full project cost. So when we look at this, we're looking at option one, around $18 million project. Option two, which is the underground parking, $26 to $27 million. And option three, the hybrid, around $21
million. A smaller building of 10,000 square feet would lower the total costs by around $5 million for any of the three options. The price tag for each option correlates to how much the city wants to invest in parking for the new center and how much open space it wants to preserve. Councilmember Jeremy Rebell said he was surprised to see such a large proposed building. He said he thought everyone had agreed on 10,000 square feet.
I thought the council gave direction, but maybe I'm not recalling that correctly, to move forward under that premise and that the seniors were happy with it and everyone was coming to a good place. And now it's back at 16,000 something square feet and $22 million. Like, what happened?
After some discussion, the council asked the architects to come back with concepts for a 7,500 square foot building footprint, with the option to have some additional square footage on a second story. Funding the project is a separate issue. The city has already budgeted $3.5 million for the new center, but council members said Thursday they will need to have more conversations about how to pay for the project, including support from Summit County, whose residents also use the Park City Senior Center. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.